C1SP. Number 20B.
And as that goes on in the subtone of truth, it screams louder, and then it's pricked, then it becomes self-contradictory, inarticulate in its argument, disjoint, unintelligible anymore in its argument, and disappears. So it seems, that's the way of seeming, of the world of seeming. It seems that the error starts with a small argument that becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. But in reality, it's the other way around. In reality, the biggest error is ignorance. The biggest error with which we have to deal seems to be dreaminess, lulled in stupefying illusion, in unwillingness to learn all things right. It's that darkness of thought. If that can be pricked from the standpoint of reality, then error diminishes right from the beginning. And so we have to see really that the arguments of error are very manifold, you see. Here she shows that these arguments are so manifold, but that we should not be irritated by these arguments of error. Error will say, you will never be the victor. Error will always lick you, because error is much more bigger and more universal, and therefore you can't stand up against it. But science must bring about the end of error, be it in an individual case, be it in a collective case, be it over great periods, over centuries, or over thousands of years. Science is the victor, must be the victor, and it will bring about the end of error. How? On which capacity? On which authority? It only brings it about on the authority of God itself, of truth working out its on a truth which does not know any error. And because truth does not know any error, it brings about, in the relative, it brings about the end of error. How? How can we help consciously that evolution? It's not enough to just think, all right, let the Christ do it, that's Christ's business, and I just go on lulling and dreaming. But as a scientist, we have to hold crime in check, and as a scientist, we can help in the spiritualization of being. How? It says, well, there is the law of mind. The law of mind, which always brings clear understanding, clear perception into any situation, and therefore always breaks the darkness. So it says to us, don't be irritated by all the apathy that goes on. Don't be irritated by the dreaminess of the mortal thought. Don't be irritated too much by the unwillingness of the human thought to learn all things right. Your job is just to stick to the one mind, to be in line with the one mind, and see that the one mind as truth is the Christ light to a situation and breaks that apathy. And sometimes we see that with people who a few years ago were very antagonistic to science or very apathetic to science. Well, if one just is persistent in knowing that that is just one belief as another belief, and that it is not personal, that it is just a belief in apathy, in unwillingness to learn all things rightly, and one just has the love and the courage to stick to the truth and know that the law of mind is breaking the light on every situation. So often we see that these people suddenly, through an experience, through something, turn to this light and brings about the end of apathy, about the end of disinterestment. Can you say that? Of being disinterested. We certainly can do that. These are facts and are laws which happen, which are real and which are not just a theory. Then we begin to see that as this light breaks in any case, and that it breaks the darkness, and that the dawn is coming on the horizon, then we must not be irritated by the second point of spirit, the truth of spirit. We must not be irritated that this light brings changes, brings interruptions into the general material routine. See, that this light, the light of mind, is a law. Is a law. That means that it always acts on its opposite powerfully. Acting on its opposite power, it brings that opposite into fermentation, into chemicalization, because it forces that opposite standpoint to change. And so that is what's called interruptions of the general material routine. It brings about the chemicalization, fermentation in the material world. And that is then what may be called all sorts of things, may be called famine, pestilence, want and woe, sickness, sin and death. We know that. We have seen that with many people, that the light only breaks on them because that light breaking on their unwillingness and darkness brings in them perhaps sickness or bankruptcy or anything like that. And that little by little turns them to the light. And this is true in an individual case, it's true in a general case, and it's true in a universal case. So, we must not be irritated when we see these things happen. When on one side we will see how discordant dismay is coming up, because we know that behind it is only the calculus of spirit working, which is working in the realm of science and peace. And as we are not irritated by this breaking up of the material routine and take the calm stand of science and peace and just wait patiently the outcome, then we see what happens in the third tone, namely that beliefs change, that the belief of that person, the belief of that situation, that belief in the whole universe or in all mankind, begins to chemicalize. There is a moral fermentation going on, changing the standpoint from belief to understanding. And in that way, we are not irritated by these moral fermentations which go on at some place and in some people. But patiently wait and endure, as she says, to the end. We just stick to what we know is the truth about the situation. Then she shows that in this process of yielding, error may always try to hit back again, and that it tries to find out another modus operandi, another means how to work evil, and that we should not be irritated in any way by such disturbances, but that we should see that these only happen because the divine law is operating behind the scene. And if we take the side of that divine law operating, we will be law-abiding, order-abiding, and rule-abiding, and await with certainty the ultimate perfection. And so, as that goes on and on, we In the world of seeming, it seems that error can strike a deadly blow, that error can become more potent and bigger and I don't know what, but in reality we stay calm. In reality we know, we begin to know, we have that true insight, that true mind reading, and that true insight, and spiritual insight in the whole situation, which shows, oh no, I just have to wait until error strikes at itself back and gives itself a deadly blow. And so we are not irritated further in the sixth when this error screams louder, when it brings forth new arguments, and when these arguments become more and more disconnected, more and more stupid, more and more unconvincing, You know how a liar, when he's driven into a corner, he brings other lies which are even more stupid and more obvious until he can no more. And then, in the last point, he uttered his voice and the earth melted. It's finished. That's the end of error. So, we can see in this way how she presents that, how she presents the way, how we can help to bring about the end of error. And that is a conscious scientific tool, and in this conscious scientific tool we just have to stick on the side of spirit, to line up with the side of spirit and consciously stay there. Consciously stay there and welcome always the true idea, the light. That's our job, to welcome in every situation that there is a solution, that there is a light, that there is a way out, and to welcome that. Then always to take the side of spirit in spite what's going on, in spite the great material routine being interrupted, in spite the material beliefs being breaking up, in spite that new claims of evil are coming to the front, in spite that new forms of pestilence and sickness are coming up, we just stick and take the side of spirit and stay there. And so in the third, we just endure and endure and endure. We have that toughness and endurance and persistency of soul. And then in that way, we are asked to work along and along these lines, and work along in that principled line. And working along in that principle line, we can know, firstly we can know that error, though it may boast itself and boast itself more and more, that it comes nearer to destruction, that it can bring forth, sixthly, more lies and more lies. We know that it is uttering only its own self-contradictions, and lastly, we know that it must disappear. Well, that's the sixth subject, and it's a jolly nice subject because it summons us to take the part of the sword of truth, to be consciously and willingly and with a clear sight and a clear insight into the law of truth, to take the part of the law of truth and work along those lines. Well, then we come to the seventh subject. In the seventh subject, we find now that the struggle is over. Truth has shown the conflict between the divine and the human, has shown the conflict which brings about the end of error. But once the end of error is brought about, then we can really inherit our true inheritance. Then we get the reward of this struggle. Then we are no more part of the old world. Then we have discarded so much in our consciousness that nothing is left which is not divinely conscious. And so the seventh subject just tells us what we inherit, that we have now gained the new world, and shows that we can now adopt this new world as a present possibility, as a world that has existed always, as a world that is not somewhere attainable in the future or after death, but that it is a present possibility and the present state of existence. I try to epitomize this last big subject like this by saying that adopting the signs of Christianity is the only way to salvation, to spiritualization. That the seventh subject summons us now to adopt this way which we have gone, which we have shown. To adopt now these six stages which she has shown as the only way of salvation, and as that way of salvation which is scientific and which alone brings a true Christianity. The two points around which this subject centers is Christianity and science, showing that only a scientific mentality, that only a mind that is lined up with spirit, with the one spirit, that only has a true Christianity, that only a scientific consciousness of the reality of being has a Christianity, and that all other ways of getting into heaven, like spiritualism, theosophy, creeds and doctrines, that they don't have a living Christianity, a living practical Christianity. Now we will see how she presents this subject through the pages, and then go over it again. She starts in first with lover's mind by showing that through adopting a new step in Christianity, that this has a spiritual recompense. We get now the gift of love. See, we get now the recompense for the struggle that we have struggled, for the victory that we have won. What is now the recompense for this struggle? The first recompense is that we find a Christianity of mind healing. That we find now that mind in its purity, and finding mind in its purity and fullness, love is that fullness, finding mind in its purity and fullness, we find naturally the whole of mind, and that mind is always a savior and a healer. Christianity is again demonstrating the life that is truth and the truth that is life by the apostolic work of casting out there and healing the sick. That's what we gain. Earth has no repayment. Earth does give us no recompense. For the persecutions which attend the new step in Christianity. But the spiritual recompense of the persecuted is assured in the elevation of existence above mortal discord and in the gift of divine love. It is showing something very nice, namely that it brings us into that new heaven and new earth of which we were speaking at the beginning of the third part. At the third part she asks us to picture, have you ever pictured the new heaven and the new earth? Here it is, here is no more the picturing, here it is that the spiritual recompense will be the elevation above mortal existence, will be the elevation into the actual experience of the new heaven and new earth. So we can see quite easily how from mind as mind at the beginning of the part up to love as mind at the end of the part, we have now the whole range of how to get into heaven. What is the scientific way of salvation? It starts with, say, first you have to have the vision of it, but the vision of it is not enough. Then through the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth subject, we work for it. We take a positive, active, scientific warfare, and then having fought to the victory in truth as love, she comes to lover's mind now and says, well, that whole way, by going through that way, you are now in heaven. You don't have to win it anymore. That's your recompense, that's the gift of love. That's the gift of love, that the idea of love leads us always, when we follow it scientifically through the order, leads us always into salvation, always. This textbook is much more beautiful than what we dreamed, much more. much more exact, much more coherent, and much more scientific, much deeper than we have ever dreamt, and that's what we still dream. So, we have the first point, you see, which says, if the struggle is over in truth, then you have your spiritual recompense. It gives you first the heaven of mind, where you get your peace of mind. Where you get the new heaven and new earth, where you have the peace of mind, and where mind is the healer of everything. You have the apostolic work. Then we come to love as spirit, and in this love of spirit we see that the true sense of Christianity can only be discerned spiritually. That only spiritually we can discern this new heaven and new earth, and that only spiritually we experience this new heaven and new earth, and that a material concept of it, that the material age cannot interpret aright this new heaven and earth and cannot see it. Therefore, we will be able to, as John the Revelator then at the end of the Bible, and Mrs. Eddy at the end of the textbook will show that this new heaven and new earth is a present possibility. That while tabernacling on this earth, on the material earth, while tabernacling, but only tabernacling on this earth, we can experience in consciousness the new heaven and the new earth. That's what the material sense cannot understand. That's what only spiritual sense can really tangibly experience. And it can only tangibly experience it, as shows here, through the influence of spirit and not of spirits. That not through an outside aid as spirits or as leaning on beliefs or as turning to people or to authorities, to human beings, we cannot find the kingdom of heaven within us. But that only by turning mentally to that mentality, to that mind which is spirit and not spirit, to that mentality which is spirit and not beliefs, that in that turning of our mentality to that which is purely spiritual, we actually find and experience the new heaven and the new earth. All these six steps were a spiritualization of our consciousness, making that spiritualization scientific. It was a scientific mental way of spiritualizing our thought. And through that spiritual scientific way, we certainly come into the spirit of the whole heaven and earth and experience it. That's why there are so many million, 2,500 million people living on this world. It's the same world for everybody. It's the world with the same, it's the earth with the same measures and with the same dimensions and everything. But one is happy in it and the other isn't happy in it. For the one, this earth is just hell. For the other, he feels, oh, I'm already in heaven, I don't have to go into heaven. What makes the difference? It is if we are inspired by a divine spirit or if we are under the influence of beliefs and human opinions and human concepts and so on. That's where heaven and earth become new or old. So here we see it again, that heaven is a state, that salvation is a state of spiritual mindedness, and that the material mindedness, the material age, can never perceive it. That's why they laugh at it. Then we come to the next paragraph, where she shows love as soul by showing that true Christianity stands inviolated by human creeds and beliefs. You get at once the tone of soul as Christianity is love, in the tone of soul where we see that Christianity is inviolate, that we cannot inviolate Christianity, that it stands in integer, intact, yes, intact, you see, untouched. See, integral is to put together, that's the tone of principle. But in tone of soul, we have that it is safe, you see, beyond the frail premises of human beliefs, above, it's resurrected. The loosening grasp of creeds, the demonstration of Christian mind healing stands, it has firm ground under the feet, a revealed and practical science. It is imperious throughout all ages as Christ's revelation of truth, of life, and of love, which remains inviolate. It remains inviolate for every man to understand and to practice. Shows that the signs of healing cannot be talked away, that the true signs of Christianity cannot be denied, cannot be gainsaid, that it is something which stands inviolate and remains inviolate by any opposite creeds or beliefs. You get a very nice sense of the integrity of that signs of Christianity against really creeds and against creeds and human beliefs, of which she says they are frail. You see, they break. They don't remain inviolate. They are frail. They are loosening grasp. Soul can never be lost, we know. See, it always remains its identity. So it shows that against that integrity of the signs of Christianity, the creeds and human doctrines will crumble. I take this one also. Then love as principle, which shows that the wedding of science and religion is not something mysterious, but practical and complete. The human sense of Christianity, creeds and doctrines deny the union of science with Christianity and consider that as something mystical. Whereas if we have grown into this scientific line where we have used the scientific mentality to spiritualize, then naturally the wedding of science and Christianity becomes very natural. That we would never dream anymore of tackling a situation just by random, just by beliefs, but as we have grown, we will always tackle them on an ordered and on the ground of a principle. So science and religion being one has become quite natural in our thought. And they are not theoretical and fragmentary, but practical and complete.